This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. And now here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Numbers, chapters 11 through 14.
So Miriam was shut out of the camp 7 days, and the people did. She was put in timeout for 7 days. And the people did not journey on till Miriam was brought in again. And afterward, the people moved from Hazeroth and camped in the wilderness of Paran. They're still moving north. In chapter 13, Israel arrives on the outskirts of the promised land. They camp at a border town known as Kadesh. And Moses sends 12 spies into the land of Canaan. Verse 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses saying, send men to spy out the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the children of Israel. From each tribe of their fathers, you shall send a man, every one a leader among them. And the 12 spies are listed for us in the next several verses, verses 3 through 15. But I want you to note, only two of these names ever get mentioned again. Hoshea from the tribe of Judah and Caleb from the tribe of Ephraim. And in a moment, we'll find out why. The men who refused to trust the Lord ended up drifting off into obscurity. This is the only place you read of their names. Verse 16, these are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, and Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. The name Hoshea means salvation, but the name Joshua means Jehovah is salvation. Apparently, Moses changed Hoshea's name to Joshua. Then Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan and said to them, go up this way into the south, and go up to the mountains and see that the land is what the land is like, whether the people who dwell in it are strong or weak, few or many, whether the land they dwell in is good or bad, whether the cities they inhabit are like camps or strongholds, whether the land is rich or poor, and whether there are forests there or not. Be of good courage and bring some of the fruit of the land. Now the time was the season of the first ripe grapes. So they went up and spied out the land from the wilderness of Zin as far as Rehob near the entrance of Hamath. Rehob was west of the Sea of Galilee near the Mediterranean. So it was kind of northwestern Israel. And they went up through the south and came to Hebron, which was in the southeast part of Israel. Ahiman, Sheshiah, and Talmiah, the descendants of Anak, were there. Now, Hebron was built 7 years before Zoan in Egypt. Obviously, they went out throughout all the land of Canaan, from the northwest to the southeast. Then they came to the valley of Ishkol, near to what would later be called the land of the Philistines, near to the Gaza Strip today. And there they cut down a branch with one cluster of grapes. They carried it between two of them on a pole. They also brought some of the pomegranates and figs. And this bounty testified of the land's prosperity, its fertility. The place was called the Valley of Ishkol. The word Ishkol means cluster, because the cluster which the men of Israel cut down there, and they returned from spying out the land after 40 days. The reconnaissance took them 40 days. Verse 26. Now they departed and came back to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. And this is basically what they reported. We got some good news and we got some bad news. First, the good news. Then they told him and said, we went to the land where you sent us, and it truly flows with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. And they showed them those grapes, those clusters of grapes and pomegranates and figs. Wow, what a prosperous land this was. Canaan was indeed a land of plenty. But here comes the bad news. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the banks of the Jordan. And the report made them all uptight. In other words, there's no vacancy in this land. This land is teeming with ites, mighty ites, Amalekites and Hittites and Jebusites and Amorites and Canaanites. And these residents won't take well with the idea of some Israelites moving into the neighborhood. Verse 28 is the showstopper for these Hebrews. Nevertheless, the people who dwell in the land are strong. The cities are fortified and very large. Moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. And in verse 33, the descendants of Anak are called giants. And the Hebrew word for giant is Nephilim, which is the same word used in Genesis chapter 6, verse 4, to describe the offspring of the sons of God, who we identified when we studied Genesis as angels, probably fallen angels, and the daughters of men. And I personally believe that this was the same thing going on later that happened before the flood, when these Nephilim, these fallen angels, these demons possessed human men and sired through the daughters of women, these mutant humanoids, these superhuman freaks, these race of giants. We talked about that. We talked about God in an attempt to keep the human gene pool pure, having to wipe out all of humanity. That's what the flood of Noah was really all about. He wanted to save humanity from this sort of genetic contamination. Evidently, this behavior was not as rampant after the flood as before, but the evil did occur locally from time to time, especially among people steeped in the occult, which would have certainly included these pagan and idolatrous Canaanites. This is why God will tell Joshua later to kill the inhabitants of the land, for he wanted to stop the spread of this perversion that had started back up again in Canaan. It's interesting that even later, after the conquest of the land, Joshua 11, verse 22, tells us that the giants who survived this purge, they settled in three Philistine cities, Gaza, Gath, and Ashdod. And guess who comes later from the city of Gath? The most infamous giant of all, Goliath of Gath. Apparently he was one of these Anak, one of these sons of the fallen angels and the daughters of women. Well, obviously the presence of giants in the land caused concern among the people. Fear spread through the ranks. The murmuring was ratcheted up. And that's when Caleb speaks up, verse 30. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it." Don't you admire this man's courage and faith, bravery? Caleb had his eyes fixed on grapes, not giants. He was speaking from faith, not fear. Caleb believed that God would assure the victory. And who was right in their assessment? The 10 or the 2? Who was right? The 2. Obviously, God agreed with the minority, not the majority. The 2, not the 10. This is why you always need to be careful when you follow the pack. For the pack might not be following God. Verse 31. But the men who had gone up with him, these other 10 guys, said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they gave the children of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone as spies is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great stature. There we saw the giants. The descendants of Anak came from the giants. And we were like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight." Chapter 14. So all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, "If only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in this wilderness." Now, Israel is headed for spiritual failure. Their problem is a lack of faith. But who do they blame? They blame the pastor. They complain against Moses and Aaron. Guys, don't blame the leader when you don't have faith enough to follow in his footsteps. They cry and they whine in verse 3. Why has the Lord brought us to this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and children should become victims? Take note of that. That our wives and children should become victims. God's plan was not to turn them into victims, but into victors. The problem was they lacked the faith to step out and be obedient to his will. And that's why they say, would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? Guys, it is always easier to look back than to press forward. It requires no faith to look back. It requires great faith to press forward. Remember what Jesus said to the prospective disciple in Luke 9, verse 62? He said, no one, having put his hand to the plow and looking back, is fit for the kingdom of God. So they said to one another, let us select a leader and return to Egypt. They're planning a coup. They want to fire Moses and install a new leader. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation of the children of Israel. And you know, the whole story illustrates the sad plight of many Christians. There are Christians who get to the edge of the promised land. God assures them victory over their sin. But they've got to believe enough to obey. They've got to enter in and take possession of the blessings. They can't be afraid of the giants that stand in their way. Giants like peer pressure or sacrifice or persecution or rejection. The joy, the peace, the satisfaction of God is in the promised land. But that land is full of unknowns. Egypt is a land of frustration and emptiness and bondage, but at least it's familiar. And many believers, after being saved from this world and its hopelessness, choose to return to Egypt rather than enter into the land that God has promised them. Guys, don't succumb to fear. Have faith. Don't go backwards. Go forward and enter into the new life that Jesus has for you. It takes faith. But it's worth it. Now this is Joshua and Caleb's message, verse 6. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the people of the land, for they are our bread. Their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. What men of faith! But note the people's reaction, verse 10. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Rather than join them, they want to silence them. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of Israel. Here comes the cavalry. God's glory comes to the rescue. Then the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people reject me? And how long will they not believe me with all the signs which I have performed among them? I mean, remember the 10 plagues. Remember the parting of the Red Sea. Remember the bread from heaven. Remember the water from the rock. I will strike them with the pestilences and disinherit them, and I will make of you a nation greater and mightier than they. Moses, I'm just going to start over with you, God says. But Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear it. For by your might you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, Lord, are among these people, that you, Lord, are seen face to face, and that your cloud stands above them, and you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and in a pillar of fire by night. Now, if you kill these people as one man, then the nations which have heard of your fame will speak, saying, because the Lord was not able to bring this people to the land which he swore to give them, therefore he killed them in the wilderness. And Moses is concerned about God's reputation among the nations. God, you can't do that. You can't start over with me. What will the other people think? You've promised to be faithful to Israel. And now I pray, let the power of my Lord be great, just as you have spoken, saying, the Lord is long-suffering and abundant in mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, but he by no means clears the guilty, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children to the third and fourth generation. Pardon the iniquity of this people, I pray, according to the greatness of your mercy, just as you have forgiven this people from Egypt even until now. Do these words ring a bell to you? We've heard these words before. These words were the revelation of God that he gave to Moses on top of Mount Sinai. This revelation was what nailed down for Moses the character of God. And I think it's interesting. Now in a time of crisis, notice what Moses refers to. He goes back to God's character. And I think that's important. It's a good model for us in troublesome times. When you don't know what's happening, when you can't see the reason for your circumstances, go back to God's character. Focus on what you know to be true, even when you're looking at situations that are confusing. Focus on God's character. Then the Lord said, I have pardoned according to your word, but truly as I live, all the earth shall be filled with the glory of the Lord, because all these men who have seen my glory and the signs which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness and have put me to the test now these 10 times and have not heeded my voice, they certainly shall not see the land of which I swore to their fathers, nor shall any of those who rejected me see it. Now it's interesting. It took God 10 plagues to deliver Israel from Egypt, and it took Israel 10 acts of unbelief to forfeit the blessing of the promised land. Call it the 10 wonders of God and the 10 blunders of the Israelites. And you know, Israel is such a lesson for us. For again, it is possible to be saved from sin and yet never experience the life of victory that comes with God's forgiveness. Many believers live and die in a wilderness, somewhere between blessing and bondage. They're not in the world, but neither are they walking in God's fullness. Verse 24, but my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit in him and has followed me fully. And don't you want that to be said about you? She has a different spirit in her. While the world settles for bondage, while many Christians end up barren, I want all of God's blessing. I want to fully follow God and fully enjoy every last favor he shows me. God continues, I will bring Caleb into the land where he went, and his descendants shall inherit it. Caleb and Joshua, the two faithful spies, were the only two members of a generation who left Egypt to ever enter the promised land. Now the Amalekites and the Canaanites dwell in the valley. Tomorrow turn and move out into the wilderness by the way of the Red Sea. Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, how long shall I bear with this evil congregation who murmur against me? I have heard the complaints with the children of Israel murmur against me. Say to them, as I live, says the Lord, just as you have spoken in my hearing, so I will do to you. The carcasses of you who have complained against me shall fall in this wilderness. All of you who were numbered according to your entire number from 20 years old and above, except for Caleb the son of Jephunneh and Joshua the son of Nun, you shall by no means enter the land which I swore I would make you dwell in. Verse 31. Remember what I told you to remember a few verses ago. But your little ones, whom you said would be victims, I will bring in. And they shall know the land which you have despised. But as for you, your carcasses shall fall in this wilderness. In verse 3, they accused God of leading their little ones to the slaughter. But God is the master of irony. It's not the children who are going to die. It's the adults who are going to die in the wilderness. The children, the second generation, will live, and they will see the land that their parents could have possessed. They'll possess it for themselves. And your sons shall be shepherds in the wilderness 40 years and bear the brunt of your infidelity until your carcasses are consumed in the wilderness. according to the number of the days in which you spied out the land, 40 days. For each day you shall bear your guilt 1 year, namely 40 years, and you shall know my rejection. 40 is the number of God's judgment. I, the Lord, have spoken this. I will surely do so to all this congregation who are gathered together against me. In this wilderness they shall be consumed, and there they shall die. And the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against him by bringing a bad report of the land. Notice the power of a bad report. You know, the congregation complained. Why? Because they had heard this bad report. When will we realize negativity spreads? Unbelief is like a bad cold. It's highly contagious. You can pass it on to your kids, and to your spouse, and to your friends. Be careful who you expose a bad attitude to. And because of the bad report brought by the 10 spies, a plague comes against them. For those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive of the men who went to spy out the land. Verse 39. Then Moses told these words to all the children of Israel, and the people mourned greatly, and they rose early in the morning and went up to the top of the mountain, saying, "Here we are, and we will go up to the place which the Lord has promised, for we have sinned." Then Moses said, "Now why do you transgress the command of the Lord? For this will not succeed." And now that God has already cast judgment on them, the people decide they want to be obedient. And the day before, God would have been with them, but now it's too little, too late. Moses warns them, "Do not go up, lest you be defeated by your enemies, for the Lord is not among you." What a difference a day makes. "For the Amalekites and the Canaanites are there before you, and you shall fall by the sword because you have turned away from the Lord. The Lord will not be with you." But they presumed to go up to the mountaintop. Nevertheless, neither the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord nor Moses departed from the camp. In other words, they headed into battle without the Lord. They were going for the Lord, but they were without the Lord. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who dwelt in that mountain came down and attacked them and drove them back as far as Hormah. Now here is the huge difference between a venture of faith and a venture of flesh. Faith takes God at His word. Faith responds to God's promptings. Flesh presumes that my will is God's will and tries to accomplish my desires in God's name. There's a difference between the two. Faith is blessed by God. God goes with faith, and faith wins victories. Flesh is destined for failure. When you go in the power of the Holy Spirit, then you experience God's victory. When you go in your own power, in the power of the flesh, you're destined for defeat. In the end, the Hebrews feared the obstacles more than they feared the Lord. You know, it's been said, our problem is not the greatness of our troubles, but the littleness of our spirits. And only Joshua and Caleb focused on the opportunities rather than the obstacles. Only two men saw the grapes rather than the giants. When you're facing giants in your life, you too need to fix your eyes on Jesus Christ. Well, this is how you turn a two-week walk into 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. The longest detour you'll ever take is the fork of unbelief. Doubt and disobedience create a detour. Guys, it's faith that receives the reward. Are you among the 10? Or are you among the 2?
Listening to Bible teaching here on the radio is a huge blessing that many of our brothers and sisters in other parts of the world simply don't have. We rejoice in this opportunity to share Pastor Sandy's messages with you. We do want to be sure to remind you that radio is not a church. Radio should be a complement to what God is already doing in your personal discipleship through the local body of believers that you're a part of. Maybe you're listening today and you don't have a home church. You've visited various places, but nothing seems to fit. First, if you live in the Atlanta, Georgia area, we want to personally invite you to join us for worship at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. We meet every Sunday morning at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. For more information, including driving directions, please log on to sandyadams.org and follow the link to the church website. Now, if you're listening outside of the Atlanta, Georgia area and are looking for a home church, we encourage you to log on to calvarychapel.com and find a Calvary Chapel in your area that teaches through the Bible, just like Pastor Sandy does each day here on this program. Well, we wish we had more time today, but we've come to the close of today's broadcast. Be sure to remember to join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through God's Word. That's next time on Sandy Adams Radio.